You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. It's all brought to you by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants. John Schmelk, Matt Sytak with you. Give us a call, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us that way. You certainly can as well. All right, we've been through free agency now, and our attention is going to shift back to the NFL draft, and we are going to be on a six-week, I believe it is, Matt? Sprint to the start of the draft, no? Or is it five?
5 weeks.
Is it only five?
It's 5 weeks, yeah.
Even faster.
Yeah.
So we are deep in. We've talked a ton about the first round pick, and we'll, of course, take your calls on whatever you want to talk about. But I thought it would be fun today. We're going to start our pro day interviews tomorrow and go through everything that happened at pro days, talk to the reporters about the prospects from the schools that they cover to get some insight onto these guys. So I thought today would be a good day to kind of take a look at day two of the draft a little bit and what some of the Giants' options might be. So I think the two realistic scenarios, Matt, that we can kind of take into consideration here is for the Giants pick at six. Obviously, they could trade up, they could trade back, they could draft any position. But let's take a look at two different, I think, more likely scenarios. One, wide receiver, two, quarterback. Just based on how this draft is going to fall, where the quality of the players are, and those sorts of things. So we'll take a look at those two scenarios and then what the Giants could do in rounds two and rounds three of this draft based off of that pick in round number one. So why don't we start by talking about the wide receiver first, Matt?
Okay.
If the Giants do go wide receiver in round one, whether that's Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers, where do your eyes and where do your attention land right now based on where the roster is and the strength of this class for their pick in round two?
Well, honestly, whether it's quarterback or wide receiver in the first round, again, we spoke about this last week. You hate to pigeonhole yourself to one position specifically for a certain pick, but I would love if on day two, whether it's, you know, the second round or the third round, the Giants to address the interior defensive line, because that is still one of the areas in which there's a hole. After the trade of Leonard Williams, A'shaun Robinson left and signed with the Panthers. Right now, there's Dexter Lawrence, who's obviously amazing, all pro. Raheem Nunez-Rochez will be back. And then there's a couple of young guys, Jordan Riley, DJ Davidson. But as of right now, it seems like that is still an area in which the Giants could benefit from adding a big body in the middle of the defense to line up next to Dexter Lawrence.
Now, what type of defensive lineman are you looking for?
Probably one that leans a little bit more towards run stuffer.
Really? Interesting. Not pass rusher, huh?
I mean, obviously you'd like a guy that could do both, of course. But right now the Giants defensive line consists of Dexter Lawrence in the interior and then Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns on the exterior.
So let me put it this way. If I'm giving you the option between 290-pound Braden Fisk or 320-pound Mason Smith, which one are you leaning towards?
I mean, you know I have a love for Braden Fisk.
Why do you think I asked you the question, Sytak?
And I know he's definitely more of the pass rushing type of defensive tackle. And don't get me wrong, I would love it if the Giants were to take him at number 47 and line him up next to Dexter. I think that could potentially be the best interior defensive line pass rush in the entire league. And combine it with the two guys on the edge, that is a fearsome pass rush right there. But, and there was a Pro Football Focus put out a 3-round mock draft earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
We actually highlighted it for today's Giants Now up on Giants.com. And in for the second round pick, they had the Giants taking Tavondre Sweat from Texas, which I know is another guy that you and I have spoken about a little bit in previous weeks.
And I think he would line up right into that second round area of the draft. I think that's where he would get.
I mean, ideally, would love Byron Murphy, but there's just no way he's dropping all the way to 47. Tavondre Sweat at 47, though, he could definitely be there. And again, he definitely leans more towards run stuffer. He is very, very large. I think he weighed in at the combine at 362 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
He is a massive guy. If you're standing next to Dexter Lawrence and you can make Dexter Lawrence look kind of small, then you are a very, very large human being. But that is a guy I, you know, would not mind. I would kind of like if the Giants maybe targeted him in the second round. You know, Jerzon Newton is another guy. He's not going to make it out of even the first round.
I could see him getting picked maybe in the 30s, maybe.
Okay.
Because he's coming off an injury. He has to work out. I don't think Illinois had their pro day yet. We got to see how he tests, because he did not test at the combine. So that'll be interesting. But no, he's not going to be there at 47.
Yeah, unfortunately not. Put him in the same category as Byron Murphy as unrealistic targets. But other than, you know, Braden Fisk, Tavondre Sweat, there's Chris Jenkins, who I've seen a lot of mock drafts that have the Giants selecting him in the third round with the 70th overall pick. I don't know if he's going to drop that far.
The borderline.
I feel like he kind of fits somewhere in between the Giants' second and third round picks is probably where he will end up going. But I do like Chris Jenkins. I think he would fit in well with the defensive line. And the other guy, and I know Dan Salamone upstairs would love this if we were to take him, Michael Hall.
Now, he's more the undersized guy now, too.
He is, yes. But Ohio State's Pro Day, I think, is going on right now.
Yep.
And I saw a little earlier before we came here to the studio, I believe he had like 26 reps on the bench press.
I want to see him run, because he did not run or do any of the agility drills at the combine. I'm really curious to see what he runs, given his size and athleticism. I'll see if Brugler has anything up yet about that, but it does not seem he does. So we'll have to wait on the numbers for that. We also have USC's pro day today as well. I think Texas is going on today too, actually. It's a very busy pro day day.
And USC.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams. But yeah, Michael Hall, definitely a little bit undersized, but more of an athletic defensive tackle. But that could be good next to Dexter Lawrence.
I think I'm comfortable, Matt, leaving defensive tackle for round three. You know, I could see picking one in round two. I get it. But, you know, if you end up with Rook Ororo from Clemson in round two, I really like Mekhi Wingo out of LSU in round three. If you can get Mekhi Wingo in round three, I think Michael Hall Jr. is going to be a third round pick. I feel okay waiting till round three. So if I get that wide receiver in the first round, and where the Giants are right now, the first position my eyes go to is cornerback. I think it's a spot where the Giants still have some questions. You know, we don't know where Cordell Flott's going to play. Is he a slot? Is he an outside guy? Do they think of him as a guy that's a full-time starter with a new defensive staff? Granted, Jerome Henderson's still here, but the new defensive coordinator might have different thoughts about starting at 175, 180-pound guy, right? So we don't know how they're going to treat him. And then right now, Nick McCloud's the other outside corner, who's been more of a, you know, utility man, backup special teams player in his career. Is he going to be the starter outside? Do they trust Trey Hawkins to take that job after he struggled out of the gate last year? So I think corner is really a spot that I think you look at. The problem is that I'm not sure round two is going to give you great value there. Three guys that I would keep an eye on, and I'll even extend into a couple others. Ennis Rakestraw out of Missouri. He's 5'11", just 183. I think he's a slot guy, not an outside corner. So that's one guy to keep in mind. Some people have him as a first-rounder. Daniel Jeremiah loves him, for example. He's more of a round-two guy for me, but he might not even be there when the Giants pick. Kamari Lassiter out of Georgia, 6'186". He tested at Georgia's pro day, and there is some debate as to what he actually ran in the 40. He did not run at the combine. Dane Brugler talked to scouts. They had him in the 4.61 area. Field Yates had him in the 4.51 area. And then Tony Pauline on draft season, which is up on the draft season feed, he had him in the 4.55 area. So that's a huge, huge swing. And 4.51 to 4.61 at corner is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Big deal. So that's something to keep an eye on, but he was a really good player on tape. He could be a second-round corner. You want a bigger corner like a TJ Tampa out of Iowa State. 6'1", 189. He's a perimeter guy. He can get physical. And if you want a slot guy, you know, go stay local. Max Melton out of Rutgers. I think he's more of a third-round guy than a second-round guy for me, early third. So maybe the Giants can get him with their first early third-round pick. That's possible. But he's a guy, one of the bigger outside corner. Cam Hart out of Notre Dame has some ability. And then, you know, if you feel comfortable with flop playing outside and you're just looking for a slot player, you know, then you can wait till rounds 3 and 4. I happen to really like Mike Sansford still from Michigan. He's a guy that I think would be a second-round pick for me. I think he'll be an excellent slot player, really good football player. Then you get to rounds 3 and 4. You know, DJ James is the guy that people like. Phillips, I think he out of Kentucky, if I remember properly. Another slot guy. Flournoy is another slot guy that was at the Senior Bowl. So there are a number of guys in rounds 3 or 4, but I do think Tampa's corner with TJ Tampa is an area that you want to keep an eye on when you get to that day two. And I think with corner, the longer you wait, it's a valuable position. These guys start going off the board, so I don't know about waiting till round 3 there, but that's another spot. Any other spots you would keep an eye on?
Well, yeah, well, just first of all, corner, I definitely considered cornerback when you asked me the question. I guess my only thought was I feel like between now and the draft, the Giants will add a cornerback in free agency.
Possibly.
A guy that can start opposite Deontay Banks. Because, of course, the team is high on Deontay Banks. Played very solid as a rookie last year. Would you want to start a rookie and a second-year player at your two starting cornerback positions with a somewhat experienced guy in the slot as well, but not a veteran out there?
No, not ideal, but I still would, even if that guy's not starting week one, I'd like to at least try to shore up the position a little bit and have somebody grow behind a vet that could start in week one. And
okay.
Then maybe by midseason he slides in.
That's fair. And I just saw this on Twitter. One guy you did not mention, most likely because he will not be there for the Giants at 47, Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Yes, no, yeah, I'm assuming he's not going to be there.
Well, I just saw that NFL Network put out that at Alabama's Pro Day, he just ran a 4.47 40.
Low as a 4.47. Because, folks, if you don't know, Pro Day times are not official. There's no electronic timer that times you like you're at the Combine. Every scout just does their stopwatch, and that's where these times come from.
And it also just Tom Pelissero noted that he was running with a Jones fracture in his foot that was discovered at the Combine.
He's
going to have surgery later this week, and he still ran as low as a 4.47. That's pretty impressive.
And people were worried about his testing numbers. That, I think, will alleviate a lot of concerns about him, which makes him even less likely to get to the Giants at 47. But that is a good name. I'm happy you mentioned him.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Somebody brought this up, too, that agents are making a big mistake not having their guys running in Indy because it's a faster track than a lot of these college pro days. So your times might actually be worse at your pro day than Indy, just based on the softness of the track. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And also, for my answer earlier with the defensive tackle, I know you asked about round two. I was just kind of thinking more day two in general.
Okay, that's fair.
Whether it's the second or third round. But kind of sticking onto the interior line, another position I think for round two in particular, guard. And I know the Giants already went out and signed John Runyon. They went out and signed Jermaine Illuminor, who has experience playing guard. They signed Aaron Stinney. And Austin Schlotman, who both veterans that have a lot of experience at guard. However, I think they could still benefit from, as we saw last year with how many injuries occurred along the offensive line, especially in the first half of the season, the more depth you could have there, the better. And the more guys that you feel, not even depth, but you feel confident in being able to put in if called upon, from even day one, I think guard is definitely a position that it would benefit the Giants to at least consider when it comes to the 47th pick.
I agree with that. I think that's
and fair. I think there are some players that, you know, right now are projected to go somewhere in that area. Just a couple of guys. Zach Frazier from West Virginia.
Yep. A lot of people think he might be a center only, but he's a good player.
Yeah, that's assuming the Giants believe that he can, you know, move out to the guard position, because obviously John Michael Schmitz has got the center position locked down. I know you have said that you're not so sure about this guy, but Zach Zinter from Michigan, assuming, you know, medically, because he got injured, it was during the college football playoff, right? that he broke his leg, or maybe
that's correct. Yeah,
or maybe the last game before that
might have been the Big
late
Ten
in the
title
season.
Game, maybe something yeah. like that. Yeah, yeah, but so it was late.
Assuming that he's like well on his way to full recovery, I think he could be a potentially good pick because
I consider him in the third round, probably not the second round.
Because prior to the injury, I feel like a lot of, again, we're talking about, you know, December, but I feel like a lot of people thought he could maybe find himself very end of the first round, beginning of the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he had a serious injury, and that's not something you can just, you know, wipe away. But assuming he gets all cleared medically, a guy I think could be potentially a good pick. Christian Haynes, who I know you've spoken about before. And probably not in the second round, but maybe closer to third round. Cooper, was it
BB? Yep.
Cooper BB.
I would honestly, if the Giants picked him in the second round, I'd be fine with it. I think he's a good player.
Yeah, I think so too. Kansas State, and then
physical guy. He's played a lot of football.
Yeah, and then just one other name I wrote down: Mason McCormick.
Oh, love Mason McCormick at the Shrine Game. He was great.
I feel like. Since the college football season ended, his stock has slowly begun to rise because I believe he went to South Dakota State.
Yep.
Not necessarily the most well-known college. People aren't really watching all their games throughout the season.
Might be the best FCS program in the country, though. Like, they're very
good. That's
true. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. And so I've just seen his stock sort of rise, especially the last, like, 2 months. So just another guy. I think he would probably be closer to round three than round two.
Agreed.
But another day two potential target.
Yeah, Dominic Pooney from Kansas, another guy I like as a day two pick at guard. I'm not as high in Christian Mahogany out of Boston College as other people are. I would consider him more as a round three guy. Bigger guy, physical, not as mobile as you would like. You know, a player that I have not mentioned, and I probably should have looked up his pronunciation before I started the show, but I forgot. Satoa Lamia. From Utah. He played guard and tackle at the Senior Bowl. I thought he was pretty good at both spots. I think he's probably more of a fourth-round pick if you kind of want to roll that way. So I think those are all good names at guard, and I agree. I think that's also a spot that you look at. And I'll throw out another position, since you went offensive line. That was on my list too, by the way. How about safety? You know, this team has safety needs. This is not a great safety class. I don't believe a safety is going to get picked in the first round. So where do they go here? And there's different types of safeties, right? Do you like the guys that can do a little bit of everything, like the Tyler Newbins and the Jaden Hicks? They're kind of like your do-everything safeties, right? Then you have Javon Bullard, who's kind of more that smaller slot corner safety hybrid type guy. He curious to see what he's going to run. I think he ran at the combine, actually, a pretty good time. So I think he's a very good player. If you want your ball-hawking free safety, Kalen Bullock out of USC, he might have the best ball skills of any safety in the country. At 180-something pounds, his tackling is a little bit of a problem. 4.47 for Bullard.
Yeah.
He did run a good time. But Bullock is really good. I love Cole Bishop at the Senior Bowl. When I rewatched the Senior Bowl tape, he stood out to me. I thought he was fantastic. I was happy for him that he ran well at the combine, annoyed because he's going to go higher in the draft because he performed so well at the combine on all the drills, not just the running, the agility, the jumping, all that was great for Cole Bishop. And Bo Braid from Maryland is actually a pretty good player too. People love Cam Kitchens. His tape's pretty good. Ran really slow in Indianapolis. I have to double check what the time was. I think it was into the 4.7s, if I'm not mistaken, but I will double check that. And I think he's still probably going to be a third or fourth round pick. But those are the safeties that I think, you know, could be options for the Giants. Because remember, you know, 4.65, was that the final time on
for
that?
For Kitchens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what that was, 4.65 for Kitchens? So we don't quite have an idea yet what Shane Bowen wants from his players on defense. We even talked to him yet. So it'll be interesting to see if they value safety there as a position they want to add to on day two of the draft.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing that I am very interested to see. But his track record with the Titans, Shane Bowen, he got some great safety play from his two starting safeties. I mean, Kevin Byard, who is now signed the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
With Bowen, his career took off. He played great. I feel like he always got good play out of his safeties.
And then Hooker, was next to him was Amani Hooker, right? He was a good
for
player
for at least
too,
some
right?
of the time. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I definitely expect the Giants to add to the safety position.
And remember, in Buffalo, Joe Shane valued the safety position too with Hyde and Poyer. So,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I thought at the beginning of last week that Jordan Poyer might be someone that the Giants would consider. Obviously, he signed with the Dolphins on a one-year deal. Micah Hyde is still
he's still out there, right? Yeah.
There are some talented free agent safeties
Justin
that are still
Simmons
available.
Simmons hasn't signed anywhere yet.
Crazy. Jamal Adams, which I know, you know, they're the negatives to his game on and off the field, but when healthy, he's a very, very talented player.
More of a box safety, obviously, but yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I definitely expect the Giants to add to the safety position between now and the end of the draft. However, I will say the two safeties that I guess are currently with the current roster projected to start, Jason Pinnock and Dane Belton, I feel very good about the two of them. Pinnock was one of my like breakout candidates before the start of last season, and he didn't have like a full breakout, but he played very solid for the first time in his career, seeing like extensive starting time. I thought he had a pretty good year. And Dane Belton, who was playing as a reserve for the whole entire season, the ball just seems to attract to him.
Yeah.
Like wherever he goes, the ball follows him. I would love to see those two guys get, I guess Pinnock was already starting, but I would like to see Belton get a little bit more playing time this upcoming season.
Well, it might have to by necessity because there's no one else.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess it depends on, you know, the quality of safety that mm-hmm. they do end up bringing in. But
Jarius Owens still here too, obviously. Their seventh round pick last year.
But I just want to say, seventh round.
Seventh, right?
Yeah. Hawkins was the sixth round.
That's
pick.
Right.
But I would like to see Belton, you know, get a little bit more playing time because I think he could really grow this season. But back to other positions. We're still talking round two?
Or three. Take your pick.
All right. Well, if we're going wide receiver in round one, and I can already tell by your initial reaction, and I feel like a lot of Giants fans probably feel the same way too.
I don't know. I actually don't know where you're going with this. I'm curious.
I think if you go, let's say, Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers at six, depending on who is there at 47.
You're going to double dip?
No. I think depending on who's there, you got to consider potentially adding a quarterback.
Oh, I was going to bring that up myself.
Oh, okay. So we're on the same page
there. I'm
with
you on that.
There are three guys that I have sort of targeted for rounds two and three.
Okay. What do you got?
For round two, it's Michael Penix and Bo Nix. And I definitely lean more towards Michael Penix. I like his game a lot more.
And I think with his medicals, there's probably a better chance he gets there.
Yeah. Although he was medically cleared.
I know.
But he obviously still has the extensive injury history.
Yes.
That will not be ignored, even though he got, you know, all the green flags when he had the medical checks at the combine.
And neither of those guys could last there either, by the way. There's a good chance that both of those guys are gone in the first round, for all we know.
Entirely possible. Mm-hmm. Entirely possible. We always see quarterbacks rise, so it's entirely possible. But if Michael Penix is sitting there at 47 and the Giants took Odunze or Nabers with the sixth overall pick, I would certainly consider it because I still think that the Giants could afford to add another quarterback to the mix.
I agree.
With Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, Tommy DeVito. Daniel's probably not going to be ready for all the spring workouts, which is going to give Drew Locke, you know, a lot of time to kind of show what he can do. But he was brought in to be the backup. Like he made it very clear in his press conference last week that he was told Daniel Jones is the starter. He's going to back up. But there's going to be a lot of reps to be had during spring, maybe even during training camp, because we don't know where Daniel's going to be in his recovery. So Michael Penix, and especially if the Giants take Rome Odunze at six, reunite those two teammates from Washington who had a ton of success together. That's something I'd like to see. And then for the third round pick, Spencer Rattler.
Oh, that would be the guy I would bring up in round three, too. We're on the exact same page here.
Spencer Rattler.
Like it.
Of course, you can't deny that the last two seasons, he's struggled. He's not lived up to the hype that he had towards the beginning of his collegiate career. But for all the hype that there's surrounding Caleb Williams, 2 years ago, Spencer Rattler was the prospect that everyone was calling the next Patrick Mahomes. He was a Heisman favorite. Everyone was saying his game looks exactly like Patrick Mahomes, that he could be the next Mahomes in the NFL. And then obviously struggled greatly the last two seasons, and a lot of the buzz died down around him. But with Brian Daboll's just track record of success with quarterbacks, I mean, the Giants won three consecutive games last year with an undrafted rookie as the starting quarterback in Tommy DeVito. I would love to see Brian Daboll given a year, 2 years maybe, a year to develop Spencer Rattler and see what he can get out of him. Because I think Spencer Rattler in the right system with the right coach and given time, if you put him out there week one, I don't think he's going to be successful. If you let him sit a year or two behind a, you know, a solid veteran starting quarterback with Daboll, Kafka, Shea Tierney grooming him, I think he could grow into eventually a very solid starting quarterback.
All right, two possessions I want to ask you about before we get to the calls. When and if do you consider running back?
So I thought about this a lot. I would say maybe round three, maybe, but I personally...
And that would probably be at the front of the running back run then. I could see like Dallas starring the running back run at the end of round two, so you would get in pretty early there with your early third round pick.
That would be the earliest. Like, I would not spend the 47th pick on a running back.
I'm with you on that.
I lean even towards not even wanting to spend the 70th pick on a running back. I'd rather wait until 108 in the fourth round. Just because, as you just said, the running backs aren't going to start going until likely the end of the second, maybe even early third.
Yep.
So if you wait until the fourth round, you're still going to get one of the top probably five running backs in the draft will probably still be there for you at 108. So
here, do you want a bold prediction for me?
Yeah, let's hear it.
There will not be one running back picked in the first 50 picks. There will be eight running backs picked in the next 50 picks.
Yeah, I mean, the first part, definitely agree. Eight in the next 50. You think it's really going to be eight?
I would say six to eight.
Which guys?
Let me bring up a list. Here's who I could see going in that area. Jonathan Brooks from Texas, Trey Benson from Florida State, Blake Corum from Michigan, Jalen Wright from Tennessee. I would say Ray Davis from Kentucky, Marshawn Lloyd from USC. Those are the six I feel good about. Braylon Allen did not run his 40 at the Wisconsin Pro Day. I think that's going to raise some red flags for people, so I would worry about him. I wonder if a team's going to roll the dice on Bucky Irving from Oregon at some point just because of his versatility. I know he didn't run well at the combine, but I think that's the group of six to eight guys that I could see going in that end of second round to start of the fourth round type of area.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see a lot of those guys going in that area too. A lot of those guys are the guys that if the Giants were to address the running back position in rounds three or four, that group obviously would be the group that I'd be targeting. Jonathan Brooks obviously coming off of a serious injury. So,
which, by the way, I think the Giants could actually afford to do that pick because they have Devin Singletary and Eric Gray already on the roster.
That's true.
And they say he's supposed to be ready by the start of training camp, for whatever that's worth.
Okay. I mean, he definitely is, even with the injury, the running back, the number one running back in this draft.
Yeah, I would say either him or Benson. I think those are the two guys for me that are at the top. Benson from Florida State.
Yeah, I like Benson a lot too. Blake Corum, I mean, he just got it done at Michigan.
His tape's fun. He actually reminds me a lot of Devin Singletary, believe it or not. They're very similar to each other, in my opinion.
Do you want to have two running backs that are very similar in each other?
Maybe you do. You have a good backup then. You don't have to change your game plan. Or you just swap one in and you just do what you do.
That's true. But Braylon Allen is a guy potentially, you know, fourth round that I would kind of have my eyes on. And I know I brought this guy up before, Isaac, I'm going to pronounce his Garendo.
Yep, I think you have it right. Yep.
He tested off the charts at the combine.
And he's 220 pounds.
He's 220 pounds and was the most athletic running back. One of the most athletic prospects altogether in Indianapolis at the combine. And I know he split carries. I forgot the other Louisville running back's name.
I don't remember it either.
I know they split carries, so he never here it is, Jawar Jordan. So he never got like the full workload, but just that athleticism, that excites me.
And former Wisconsin back. He was actually at Wisconsin and transferred to Louisville.
And in for a fourth round pick, I feel like...
I think day three pick, I mean, I think that's fine for him as a flyer.
Yeah.
I'm with you. All right, I'm not going to mention tight end. Darren Waller, we just... don't know, so hopefully there'll be some clarity on that by the time we get to the NFL draft.
I hope
reports.
So.
And then we could have that deeper conversation.
But
and
Jatavion Sanders, if we don't have to go into it, but that is the one tight end of the group.
The question is, would you use a second round pick on him?
No, and then he's probably going to be gone before 70.
I think he goes between 50 and 70. Yeah, I think that's where he winds up. I'm with you on that. And I'll just bring up receiver. It's the Giants. Let's say they trade up or do something else, and they pick a quarterback in the first round. There are a number of second round receivers that I think could be a lot of fun. I'm going to focus on guys that I think fit with Wandale Robinson and Jalin Hyatt. So I'm not going to talk about Xavier Worthy because I think he's Jalin Hyatt. They're a very similar type of player, yeah. Right? I'm not going to talk about a guy that I think is a slot only. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina.
He'd be my top guy.
He's more of a third-round pick to me than a second-round pick. I'm
really?
Not as high on him as everybody else is.
Wow.
He's got good measurables. He runs fast. I just don't see it on the tape. I don't. Keon Coleman, his testing worries me. I don't think he separates well on tape. I was never a huge fan of his, even when you know the hype train was him getting picked 15th overall back in October, November. Mm-hmm. Listen to draft season. The receipts are there. But if he's sitting there in the middle of the second round, his GPS numbers are a lot better than his testing numbers. I would be have a consideration there. Devontae Walker, I think, has it in him to become an X wide receiver. That's a guy I would consider picking in the second round to draft and develop to become that X wide receiver if you want to go there. Then there are other guys that I really like Troy Franklin. I don't think he's going to get there. I love Ricky Pearsall. He was a good player. I'm not sure he's a perfect fit. You know, wait till the third round. Take Jalen McMillan out of Washington. You know, people call him a slot because he played there with Roma Dunze there last year. Well, he was their X receiver before Roma Dunze got there. He's 6'1". He's 200 pounds. Or 191, whatever he is. He can play outside. So that's another guy that I happen to really like. Or Jalen Polk, his teammate at Washington. Another guy that can kind of be an outside receiver for you. And then one sleeper, only because he tested really well and he has the size you're looking for. I think as a day three pick, I'd roll the dice on Cornelius Johnson out of Michigan. He's a big, long, lanky guy that's a deep threat. I think he's a better route runner than people think. His testing at the combine was better than people thought it was going to be. So those are some set day two and even a couple day three wide receivers in there for you if people have any interest in that.
Yeah, I like a lot of those guys that you just mentioned. Troy Franklin, I think if he just bulked up, he would be going way higher than what he's currently projected.
Problem is that if he bulks up, does he lose his speed?
True. I mean, he ran a 4.41 at the combine.
And his tape looks faster than that, to be honest with you.
But he also weighed in at 6'2", 176.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what he weighs in at the Washington Pro Day, if he's a little bit heavier when he's not running the 40 again.
Yeah. Jalin Polk was a guy I was going to mention. Really like him. I know Odunze gets most of the attention, and rightfully so, but Jalin Polk had a really good year for Washington. Mm-hmm. Good size, 6'1", 203 pounds. Would be an interesting pick in the second round if he even makes it to 47. And one other guy you did not mention, which I feel like people are either they love him or they hate him.
Who's that?
Malachi Corley.
Yeah, I don't think he's a fit because I think he kind of plays the Wandale Robinson role in terms of like a kind of gadgety slot guy to start. He can become more than that. And I like him. I had a one-on-one with him at the Senior Bowl. I'm just not sure he fits what the Giants would be looking for necessarily. But I think he's a second-round pick. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, it's just 5'11", 215. He's built.
He's built like a running back. I stood next to him. I stood next to him at the Senior Bowl. He's built like Saquon Barkley.
I feel like of the entire wide receiver class in this draft, I'm not saying he's going to become this guy, but I feel like Malachi Corley could fit into that like Deebo Samuel type player.
That's what he is. 100%.
Which I would sign up for Deebo Samuel.
And I'll throw one other kind of maybe late day two, early day three guy, Jerry Rice's kid, Brendan Rice out of USC.
I have him on my list as well.
He's interesting. He's 6'2", he's 208, he's a bigger wide receiver. I think he showed enough of me at the Senior Bowl. Again, I just don't like watching the USC tape. I just don't like their offense and the way it functions. So I think it's hard to kind of talk about players in that system, but I think he's a guy. Round three, round four, if you're looking for a bigger X-type wide receiver, I don't think he has it in to be a star, but I think he could be a really solid, good NFL wide receiver. So
yeah, I'm with you on that.
Folks, those are some names for you.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
For rounds two and three, before we start diving into these pro days, hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, go subscribe to the Giants Huddle podcast. Right now we have an interview with all the players the Giants signed last week. I wanted to let those live there for a while so you have a chance to get through them all. Brian Burns, Devin Singletary, John Runyon, Jermaine Illuminor, and Jalen Mills, I believe, are the five that are up there. So go check those out. Tomorrow, I did about 25 minutes with Sean O'Hara. He gave us a breakdown on the Giants' new offensive line additions. So make sure you go check that out as well. A lot of time spent on Illuminor and John Runyon. So that's coming up on Thursday in the Giants Huddle podcast. And a lot more coming up next few weeks as we get ready for the NFL draft. Giants.com, Giants mobile app, favorite podcast platform. Just search for Giants Huddle podcast. All right, let's get to the phones. 201-939-4513. Go to Hugo in New Jersey. He will lead us off. Hi, Hugo.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I want to make a couple comments about our free agency. I think the philosophy was good. In other words, not investing in low positional value in running backs and safeties. I was, frankly, a bit disappointed in the execution. And, John, I'll just go back to some comments you've made in the past. And I think you said this, which is trading valuable draft assets and then paying big contract for a player is not a prudent way to build a roster.
Generally speaking, Hugo, I do not like using two sets of assets to acquire a player, where you have to trade for him using a pick and then sign him using your cap space because you're using two different buckets of assets to get one player. Generally speaking, I'm not in favor of that. Burns, it was only a second-round pick. It was a high two, but it was only a two. It wasn't a one. And he's in a premium position where a player of that caliber is not going to become available via free agency, period. He's just not at that age. So that's the toll you have to play just to get access to the player. Generally speaking, you're absolutely correct. I don't like that process, but I understand why they would bend that a little bit to get a guy like Burns.
Especially because he's only only 25 years old.
Exactly.
Well, here's where I am on this, right? As I wrote it down on paper, the Giants are spending about $40 million AAV on Brian Burns and John Runyon. And in my mind, I could have taken that $40 million of AAV and done a lot more, I think, to improve the team and retain the 39th overall pick.
In year one of them, in terms of how the cap hits, it's only around 25, I think, when I looked at how the contracts are broken down combined. But average per year, I understand where you're coming from with that. I think it's probably closer to like 37 or 38.
Okay. So look, I mean, for this to work, I think Brian Burns has to be at the level going forward. I know he's young. Parsons, Garrett, T.J. Watt. If he's not at that level, and there's nothing in his resume that suggests he can get to that level, and Carolina is not a cash strap or not cash strap because their owner is like a billionaire, but they're also not in cap hell by any means. They have a rookie quarterback under contract.
Yeah, but I think they wanted to use those resources to build around the rookie quarterback and not use the money on a defensive player, which is why I think ultimately they did the trade.
Bingo.
Especially
and
considering all of the assets they traded last year to get Bryce Young.
Correct.
Well, hold on a second.
Yep.
Bingo. We should be thinking the same way because as we've talked about on this podcast many times, the Giants have holes all over the place and they're in rebuilding mode. So, you know, Brian Burns would be a great addition to the Baltimore Ravens, a finishing piece that would put him over the top and just terrorize Patrick Mahomes in a playoff setting. But for us, I think there were more prudent ways to spend the resources.
If he was 28 or 29, Hugo, I would say yes. But I think to Matt's previous point, just 25, he's going to be 26. This is a guy that in 3 years is still going to be in the middle of his prime. When you're like maybe hopefully competing for a Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
So John, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You guys hit it. We still need more guards. We still need defensive linemen.
And Hugo, by the way, you know my approach to free agency. I said on the show a million times, I wanted to just do offense, 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 offense. That's what I wanted to do. So I totally get where you're coming from.
So here's my question. We have one legitimate starting defensive lineman on the team right now. When the teams are running down our throats and we're trailing in games, what value is Brian Burns going to provide when we never get teams in third and long? Or we rarely get teams in third and long?
Well, I think you hope that the run defense is better. And I do think they have a number of players. You go, no, I'm being serious. And I was actually going to bring this up when Matt brought up the interior defensive lineman. I think the Giants believe that they have some players in-house that they can stop the run with. Whether it's Nacho, who was a good run stopper in Tampa before he got here. I think they like Jordan Riley as a run stopper, as a just a huge human being you can plug in there. You know, DJ Davis has been here a couple of years, got hurt his first year. I think they believe in Bowen's system, and Bowen has a really good history of his team stopping the run extremely well, that you can be a better run-stopping team than what they were the last couple of years with Wink.
And also,
that's a lot of hope.
In Bowen's defense, we'll see this once the season starts. The Giants' defense is not going to be blitzing 5-6 guys every other play like they were under Wink Martindale. Bowen's defense sends four guys. Your four defense alignment. That's who he relies on to get after the passer. So that's where the acquisition of Brian Burns makes a lot of sense, because if you're only sending four guys, you want those four guys to be able to hit home and pressure the quarterback. Brian Burns is 100% going to help do that.
And Hugh, you're right. The statistical profile doesn't show a guy at the level of T.J. Watt and Micah Parsons and stuff like that. You're right, it doesn't. You look at the numbers, pressure rate, pressures, sacks, pick whatever one you want. It doesn't match up with the guys at the upper echelon of the edge rushing class. Totally agree with you. But if you watch the tape and you watch his physical ability, you see that skill there. So I hope, and again, I'm using the word hope again, that in a different setting, in a different defensive system, now he was in multiple systems in Carolina, which is fair, that you can get more production that matches the skill set you see on tape.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of hope in all your comments about both the production from the defensive linemen on the roster as well as where Burns will get to. I think I've taken enough time. I'll call next week and talk about the offensive line, but I guess one theme is I didn't really understand the Runyon signing. I mean, he's kind of like not an imposing guard, and he's not very good in the run game. I mean, to me, he's a marginally better player than Ben Bredesen, but $7 million more expensive.
He's
so
Hugo, he's a much better pass protector than Bredesen was.
John, what are the weaknesses of the Eagles and Cowboys on defense? You're going to tell me that
The Eagles' weakness is their secondary, Hugo. What do you mean? What's the Eagles' weakness on defense? Their secondary stinks.
Well, yeah, but their run game, they're pretty bad against the run, and the Cowboys are very. But look, the problem is.
Now, see, Hugo. I will disagree with you here. If you bring an offensive lineman, I prioritize pass protection over run blocking every time, twice on Sunday.
Okay, so let's drop Daniel Jones back against the Cowboys and see how that works. Didn't work very well last year, but in the opener he basically got bludgeoned. So I'm.
But that's why why the Giants went out and spent big money on two offensive linemen, was to help improve the pass protection.
And look, we've seen it the last couple of years, and I think how they operate in free agency here, Matt, kind of settled it for me. I already thought this anyway. Brian Dable wants to pass the ball.
Yes.
He's not a guy that wants to pound it 30, 35 times in a game and pass it 25 times in a game. It's not what he wants.
No.
I mean, just go back to his time in Buffalo. Dude likes to throw it, all right? And when all things are equal, he's going to prefer to throw the football. And I think the way they're building this roster out is they're building out to be a team that is going to throw the football more. And that's why I still think at number six, you're looking at someone that's going to impact the passing game.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
One way or the other, yes.
201-939-4513. Cliff in New York is up next. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the great stuff, as usual.
Yep.
As I'm salivating over all these guys that you're talking about in the draft.
And Cliff, watch. They won't draft one of them. We listed about 50 guys. They're not going to pick any of those guys. Watch.
Yeah, well, our problem is we have the least draft choices in that I can remember we have a fat six, and the number five is more like a six than it was before the Burns trade, and I'm not complaining about the trade. But I would still love to see somehow more draft choices, and I don't know any way he's going to get that other than trading down the first round pick. And I don't think he has any assets that I can think of to trade for other draft choices like he made such great use of in his first 2 years. But, you know, look, it is the way it is.
Wait, Cliff, one thing on that note, I just want to make sure you remember, Joe Shane's first draft, they traded down in the second round and then selected Wandell Robinson. So it's not just the sixth pick that they could potentially trade down to acquire more assets.
Good point.
Just wanted to put that out there.
Oh, I like that. Thank you. Yeah, I like that. I hadn't thought of that. I knew that Wandale was a product of his moves during the draft, and so was Hyatt.
Yeah, they moved up for Hyatt. Joe Shane has clearly shown that he is not afraid to move up or down to get the guy that he wants to
remember,
get.
He moved down twice the year they drafted Robinson.
Yeah,
he went from 36 to 38, and then from 38 to 43.
And then used some of those picks. No, that was the next year that they moved up for Hyatt.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So the Hyatt pick, he had some capital to trade up with. He had some.
Well, he just traded the fourth round pick, and then the Giants didn't have a fourth.
Well,
round
he
pick.
Can't do, if he does that this year, he's empty in the fourth round. I mean, he only had one fourth rounder that year. Well, whatever. We know that he'll do the best he can to have as many choices as he can. Look. You got me going with the internal defensive line. I had a bunch of other things. I'll try to be quick. I don't watch college football much, but I happened to tune in to the Louisville, Florida State game on national television, and I saw Brandon Fisk, and I said, I want this guy. And then on Twitter, I had a chance to chime in a conversation about the game, and I said, hey, what about this Fisk guy? He looks like the real deal. And so somebody replied, he is the real deal, but let's see how he does in the next few games against better defenses. So I'm just wondering, number one, if anybody remembers how his rating might have changed after that huge breakout game. I guess they were tournament games, and then that whole controversy about Florida State being, you know, given a bad deal and all that jazz. Did they not play any more games for him to show it? Do they have any clue as to whether or not the Louisville thing, which was such a big splash, was, more than a misleading thing?
No, I mean, I think Braden Fisk finished the year pretty strongly, Cliff, and I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. I mean, if you look at his production over the course of the year, I'm trying to see when they played Louisville. They had Louisville on their schedule that was his last game of the year. So that was the conference championship game against Florida State. And then he sat out the bowl game against Georgia with basically every other draft-eligible Florida State player. But, no, I mean, look, he played well against Florida State. Played well against Louisville, pardon me. He played well against Florida, which is another, high-quality team. He played well against Duke, which is actually a pretty good offensive line. They have Graham Barton there. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry about level of competition with Fisk. That to me wouldn't be a concern.
Yeah, I mean, looking at his game log, the last three games of the season, Louisville, Florida, and North Alabama, but five sacks, 7.5 tackles for loss. Those are some pretty strong numbers.
Yeah, I wouldn't be concerned about that at all. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Donnie in Queens. He's up next. Hi, Donnie.
Hey, guys. Not the reason for my call, but just to touch on the first caller. You know, spreading your money around to more positions requires the same amount of hope that you hope that Burns takes the next step in his career. This is all hope when you're talking about free agency and the draft. You're always projecting forward. And
I would say calculated bets, Donnie, more than hope. Yeah. I would say calculated bets.
Fine, educated guesses, right? Whatever, however you want to place it, it's the same concept. You know, I personally don't believe if I have $40 million in cap space, I need to try to spread that out across all my holes. I think you're better off attacking parts of your roster and creating strengths and identities. And I think with Okereke, Kayvon, Dexter, and now Burns, for the first time in a while, you consider the Giants legitimately have something they can look at that might be a strength in terms of their front seven and pass rush that they haven't really had in a long time. They've kind of had units where they've had players at, but not an actual full group of guys that you could feel really good about. So I understand his concept about not trading the picks plus the salary, but I think in this opportunity they had to actually build a strength and identity on the defensive side of the ball was a worthwhile gamble. My call was more about the lack of talk I hear about offensive tackle at number six. Totally understand the wideout argument, and I know that it's supposed to be a great draft for it. Same thing with the offensive line. I do, however, believe this is not a one-year build here. I think we would all probably agree on that.
Sure.
And that it's harder to find offensive tackles than it is wideouts. Last year was a weird year at the wide receiver position where it wasn't a really strong draft, but it seems like every year I tune into your draft coverage, you guys like guys all the way into the third round. You can't say that about the offensive line.
No, you're right about that. Donnie, you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, and while I understand this is a strong class on the offensive line again, if we still had 37 or 39, whatever it is we trade to the Panthers, maybe you could have got somebody there. But I think if you're waiting to get to 47, you're probably not getting that.
I agree
and
with
again,
that.
If you draft, Joel Alt, I think now you look at a team that is four deep at the tackle position. You have Neal now as another guard body to throw in there. And you can actually look at having strengths on both sides of the ball. So that's where I would go, you know, assuming they had them relatively closely graded. I would be looking at Alt at six. Personally, I would take a quarterback, but sometimes I like to leave that out of the equation because it just opens up a whole other rabbit hole. So thanks for taking my call, and I'll hang up and listen.
Look, Donnie, there is a legitimate argument for picking a tackle at six. I get it. I mean, would I sit here and lose my mind and say you're nuts for drafting Joe Alt at six? No, of course not. He's a really good player. He's to be a top offensive tackle in most draft classes. I do not worry about him moving from the left to the right side. I think he'd be fine. That's not something that I'm overly concerned with. It might take a little time, but I think he would figure it out. So, no, I wouldn't lose my mind about it. You're right. You can find receivers later, but you can't find guys that would be the number one wide receiver in, you know, seven of the last 10 wide receiver classes in every other draft. That's kind of the thing. And if you want to completely give up, and that's what you're doing. If you draft Joe Alt, you are giving up on Evan Neal as an offensive tackle after 20 games, 20 regular season games, 22 if you count the playoffs. You're giving up on it. And I'm not sure that I think with the signing of Illuminor, they're willing to entertain the possibility of maybe Neal moving to guard. But if you draft a guy like Alt, that's it. The tackle window is closed and shut. It is over for Evan Neal playing tackle. I'm not sure they're there yet.
And then if they were to do that, then Andrew Thomas, Joe Alt are your two starting tackles. You signed Runyon to start at one of the guard positions. Now all of a sudden you have Evan Neal and Jermaine Illuminor. One of them is on the bench then.
Correct.
And I agree with you. I don't think they're willing to completely give up and say Evan Neal is no longer a starting offensive lineman. I think it's more likely that they give him a chance to move inside to guard before they fully give up on him. If it weren't for the Illuminor signing, I would say 100% that Joe Alt or an offensive lineman would be in the conversation at number six.
I agree.
But when you spend a decent-sized chunk of your cap space on a tackle who has a ton of experience with your offensive line coach.
Starting at tackle.
They spent 2 years together in New England, 2 years together in Las Vegas. They seem to love each other. Illuminor was raving about Carmen Brasillo in his press conference last week. If it weren't for that signing, then I would say you're 100% right. Joe Alt is in the conversation for making most sense to be the number six pick. But considering they went out and spent a lot of their cap space on two offensive linemen who presumably will both be starting somewhere on the line, that is what gives me a little bit more pause in spending the six pick at that position. I think if you want to take a chance on someone on day two at offensive tackle, 100% fine with that.
Yeah, me too.
Because as we said, Evan Neal, like, unfortunately, like, the jury is still kind of out. Like, he needs to show something this year to show that he should be a starting right tackle.
Hey, Joe Shane said in his press conference after the season's over, he's got to play better.
Yeah.
He was very clear,
you know,
about it.
The signing of Illuminor, it wasn't like a incredibly long-term deal. So I wouldn't mind taking a day two pick on a tackle, letting him sit, come in as a reserve potentially. But as we've talked about, a lot of the callers have talked about, the Giants still have numerous areas that are like actual needs. Mm-hmm. And right now, given the moves they've made so far in the offseason, including the two reserves that they signed, I just don't think that offensive tackle is as big of a need as all of these other positions that
I agree
talked
with that.
About.
Just real quick, day two tackles. I'll throw a couple names out there for people. Patrick Paul out of Houston. Big, tall, lanky guy. I think he needs some development still. But again, maybe that would be a good thing. I like Roger Rosengarten out of Washington. I think he is multi-positional flex left and right tackle. I think he's a good athlete. He's physical. He's got a good punch. And I like Christian Jones out of Texas. He might be more of a fourth-round pick maybe, but I think he's a guy that has some ability to maybe play some tackle. And I like Javon Foster from Missouri at the Senior Bowl too, I think. I think he's more of a day three pick, but he's the guy that I was impressed by when I watched him over the course of the Senior Bowl week. Not the most fit, athletic guy in the world, but he just seemed to get the job done as a potential day three flyer at offensive tackle. He certainly got the size. He's a big guy, 6'6", 313. So just a couple names I figured I'd throw out there if you're interested in the offensive tackle. We'll get to Len in a second. I'm just going to make the statement, and I'm going to move on. You can comment if you want to. We're going to talk a lot about the quarterback here over the course of the next month and a half, right? This is where I've landed, folks. I'm going to give you my opinion on what I see from watching the quarterbacks, but here's the bottom line. Joe Shane was there when they drafted Josh Allen, and more importantly, Brian Daboll developed Josh Allen. We saw how he was able to get good play out of Tommy DeVito last year, what he did with Daniel Jones and not a whole lot around him 2 years ago. Basically, according to a lot of the EPA metrics, was a top 10 offense 2 years ago, okay? If Brian Daboll picks out a quarterback and tells Joe Shane, this is the guy, he's my starter, I think we can win a championship with him, and I think he's going to be a great quarterback, I'm not going to argue with the selection. I trust Brian Daboll and Joe Shane to make that decision. And as Kurt Warner has pointed out on Twitter, as a bunch of other people have pointed out on Twitter, quarterback evaluation is really hard. It's tough. It's hard enough for NFL teams that do this for a living. It's much harder for people like us who are media people and are just doing the best we can. So I can tell you what I think, but the people that interview these quarterbacks, have them on 30 visits, and do all these things with them and have so much more insight into them and off the field and on the field. You know, the whole Lance Zierlein thing I talked about on the Giants Huddle podcast the other day. It was draft season with Tony Pauline. How he said NFL front offices think much higher of J.J. McCarthy than the media does, right? Because they rave about, oh, his pre-snap recognition, how he's able to get to the right thing based on, you know, coverage and stuff. I'm not a quarterback. Like, I don't know where the quarterback should be looking based on what the defensive look is before the snap. I'm just not capable of evaluating that way. And even if I was, I wouldn't have the time to do that deep dive on all these players as we try to get this thing done. So I'm going to trust Brian Daboll's judgment on these guys, where if he thinks the guy is the guy, I'm going to be good with it, because I think his history with quarterbacks should be enough for anybody to trust his decision on if they decide to draft a quarterback, that it's going to be the right guy.
Yeah,
and that's all I'll say.
You nailed it on the head. I could not agree more with you. If Brian Daboll, who, you know, maybe prior to last season, everyone was saying is like a quarterback whisperer, if he thinks that a quarterback that they could take either at number six or even in the second round, if he thinks that there is a guy there that he says, you know, it might take a little bit of time, but I think this kid can develop into a starting franchise quarterback, he knows significantly more than any of us. Like, I fully trust him to make that decision, because that's a decision that, you know, the coaching staff and front office are going to have to live with. So I could not agree more with you. And just one player in particular that seems to be, you know, at least on Giants Twitter, the most polarizing guy I think I've ever seen, J.J. McCarthy.
Oh my God. It reminds me a lot of Daniel Jones a few years ago, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, but I think one thing that fans can't seem to get over is fans are focused on where J.J. McCarthy was being projected by the media in mock drafts 2 months ago. When the season first ended and all of these original mock drafts were coming out, a lot of the top media analysts out there, top NFL guys out there, didn't even have J.J. McCarthy as a first-round pick.
And by the way, even today, Dane Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, Lance Zierlein, he's going to be a late on their big boards. He is in the 20s or early 30s on their big boards.
Yeah, but in the mock drafts of a lot of those guys, you've started to see that he is now rising. And now it seems to be almost like consensus opinion that he's not making it out of let's call it the top 12. The Broncos at 12, I would say,
would probably be the
absolute floor. I don't think he's coming even close to that floor.
I don't think he's getting out of the top five, Matt. I think somebody's trading up with the Chargers to pick him at five. That's what I think is going to happen.
You've got to think that the trade that the Vikings did last week is gearing up to make another move up, similar to what the Buffalo Bills did in, 2018 for Josh Allen?
Yeah, I mean, right now, that's the Vikings. The Broncos are sitting there with Jared Stidham as their starting quarterback, and the Raiders are sitting there with Gardner Minshew as their starting quarterback.
Yep.
You don't think those teams want to draft a good young quarterback? Of course
100%.
They do.
100%.
So it's going to be competition to move up to one of those spots. And who knows? Maybe McCarthy goes third and Drake May's the guy that goes fourth in the class. That's possible too.
It is possible.
Who knows? Or maybe it's Jaden Daniels that ends up going as the fourth quarterback. All those things are possibilities. So, look, we'll have the debate. I'm happy to have the conversation, break down what you see from the quarterbacks, what I see. We can have that debate and conversation. But if Brian Daboll says, no, this is the guy I want, I believe him, he's the guy, I'm not going to argue with it. I'm just not.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think fans need to just forget the mock drafts from 2 months ago. They don't mean anything now.
Well, and I think they also have to be able to accept what they don't know. I think I'm more than willing to say I trust somebody else's evaluation to make this decision a lot more than I trust my own eyes.
100%.
Because they know a lot more about this than
That's
I
what
do.
They're paid to do.
That's their job. I'm yes. doing the best I can. I'm trying to give you information on the players so you're educated about them. But the idea that I would say Brian Daboll's evaluation of a quarterback is wrong and mine is right would be a level of hubris that my head wouldn't be able to fit through the door of this studio. So I'm not going to go there. I'll just leave it there. All right, Len in Columbia, Maryland, will wrap us up today. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're great.
Good.
John, you want me to not think I know more than Joe Shane? Come on, man.
I'm a fan, man. No, I totally agree with that, and I want you guys to have your opinions and call up, and that's all great. Even after they make the pick, you want to disagree with the pick. That's why we're here, 100%. But I do think quarterback is almost a separate case and argument. It's such a tough position to – even Kurt Warner, who's a Hall of Fame quarterback, has spent 2 weeks on Twitter discussing how difficult it is for him to figure out which one of these drafting quarterbacks are going to be a really good player. If Kurt Warner can't figure this stuff out, how the hell am I going to come out and say authoritatively, this guy's going to be awesome? I'm not that self-deluded to think that I have that type of ridiculous insight into quarterbacks. That's
I
it.
Agree. But let me take it this far. I'm holding that sixth pick. I don't want to trade that sixth pick.
I don't either. Let
but,
I'm with
but
you.
But I'm not spending that sixth pick on the fourth, fifth, or sixth quarterback in this draft.
And I totally get where you're coming from on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now one other reason for hanging on to that sixth pick. We need immediate firepower. I don't quote Lance much, but Lance got it right. We're averaging 15, 16 points a game. We need somebody. Game one, here's my prediction, guys, by the way. It's the early Monday night game. It's Giants at home, 100th season being, kicked off here against one of our longest rivals. I'm not sure who that is. It's either the Eagles or the Commanders. That's my guess for the opening game.
The Eagles are playing in Brazil week one.
Yeah, so it isn't going to be Philly yet. Philly's in Brazil in week one. And Len, I would think more of a Sunday game in week one for the Giants than a Monday night game. That would just be my guess.
All right. Well, then my thinking is it's going to be the Commanders because that's our oldest rival.
Yeah, it's possible.
All right. Okay.
I'll tell you what, though. Steelers, old school NFL team like the Steelers, to celebrate the 100th anniversary in week one with the Mara and Rooney families connected.
That'd be pretty cool, too. Good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Wait, are the Giants home versus the Steelers or at the Steelers this year?
No,
I should
keep
my mouth shut before I make that suggestion.
I think they're at the Steelers.
Okay, so never mind. That would have worked then, would it?
All right. I'm going with Commander.
Clearly, Len, I haven't thought that deeply about that yet. I'm not in schedule release mode yet. I'm not there yet.
All right. Okay. A name that. Back to my point. We need firepower. We need it opening day. Odunze or Neighbors gives us that firepower. That's what my thinking is today. John, you know, I talked about that guard from Baltimore all offseason, almost back as far as January, Simpson.
And the Jets signed him.
I was disappointed the Giants didn't move that direction. He's a real good player. But okay, hey, we got Runyon. Good move. Nice move. We have improved that offensive line. It's a better offensive line in terms of starters and depth we had last year and probably that we've had in a couple of years. So those were all good moves, but I thought I had to mention it, John, because I talked about Simpson the whole offseason.
Yeah, and Simpson's is more of a mauler type. I think Runyon's a better pass protector. Simpson's more of that mauling run game type. Yeah, not surprising he came from Baltimore, that's the type of player that he is.
Yes, true. And it could be he got cut when he was with the Raiders by our current offensive line coach. So it could be that there really wasn't much chance he was going to come to the Giants.
What was Brasillo there when they cut Simpson?
Yeah, he was.
He was? Okay.
I'm pretty sure I got that right.
I'm sure you are. I'll have to check it.
Yeah, okay. Hey Matt. We got to get another safety. I know the narrative on Belton is he's a ball hawk. I'd like to know, and I'm not smart enough to figure out how to do this, and I'm not asking you guys to do it, believe me. I'd like to see when those interceptions came. Was he the third safety on the field? I don't see him in a two-safety look, Matt. I don't think he covers well. You put him in coverage, man coverage, and I think we're going to get burned.
Well, luckily, Bowen plays a lot of zone, Len, so that'll help.
Yeah. Oh, well, now, if we put him in that situation, you know, maybe. But I still think we need the kid Owens hardly played last year. I mean, we expect him suddenly to get on the field and be a starter.
No, I wouldn't expect that.
It can't work that way. I think we got to look for another safety, Matt.
And, you know, Len, I think there's a possibility, to Matt's point, you mentioned this with corner, there's so many veteran safeties out there, I could see them adding a veteran safety between now and the draft, too, and that could be like a $2-3 million player that can come in there and be kind of that backstop in case the young guys don't work.
And, Len, I agree. I think cornerback and safety, both of those positions, someone needs to be added, whether it's free agency or the draft.
Yeah,
all I said was I think Belton has earned just a little bit more playing time. I didn't say, you know, name him the starting safety.
You like Belton more than the cornerback options is I think the point you're trying to make, right? You like Belton at safety more than you like the guys in the mix at corner at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
As you can tell, I'm not that high on Belton in certain situations, but I agree with that. We got, and here's where we're beginning to run out of time and players. It's slowing. The free agency is slowing down already.
The Giants were not going to be able to fill every hole this offseason in free agency. They weren't going to be able to do it.
We're moving through the second tier, but we're moving, closer to the front door of the department store where we're shopping. we're soon going to be heading into the next level. I mean, there's not a lot of players that we want out there for 17 games, 60, you know, however many, 60 plays a game for 17 games.
Len, thanks
for the call, man. We got to run.
In 2022, the Giants signed Fabian Moreau off the street with the season already started. He came in and was very solid at the number two cornerback position for the rest of the season.
Wasn't McLeod a late camp pickup off a cut as well?
The Giants claimed him off waivers when the Bills caught him on cut down day at the very end of training camp. And just to one other thing that Len brought up, I looked up, Dane Belton has 4 career interceptions. Last season, both of them came against the Rams, in which he did not start. So Len was right, he was the third.
I feel like someone left with an injury in that game.
Was that the game that Pinnock
hurt his shoulder?
It might have been.
But
I look back to his 2 interceptions as a rookie, and both of those came when Belton was starting.
Okay.
So it's not all of his production coming as the third safety. He has shown that he can play, you know, hold his own when he is one of the 2 starting safeties out there. I just wanted to put that out there since I looked it up.
That's very good research. Let me see. I'm very curious here. about that game against the Rams. What week was that, Matt?
I want to say week 16?
17, actually. Here we go. Game book. Curious to see how many. I'm just looking to see how many snaps Pinnock and McKinney played in that game. Let's see. So in that game, defensively, where's defense? Defense.
Yeah, he only played 16 snaps, Pinnock.
Yeah, so Belton, that was the game Belton.
So all four of his interceptions have come when he is one of the two safeties out there.
That's interesting. It's funny, real quick, and then we got to go. Looking at the Giants' home opponents this year, I'm with Len. I like the Commanders as week one. And I think it gets some juice for the league too, right? You'll have like the rookie quarterback, whether it's Jaden Daniels or Drake May, first game, you know, Giants, 100th anniversary, that whole thing. I think that, to me, would be a really fun week one opponent. And it's a game that you feel like you have a good chance of winning.
Yeah, if the Giants are home. We don't, you know. If,
true. We don't know about that.
We don't know if
that.
They're
going to
be home
true.
Or away
that's
in the
true.
Season opener.
Yes. I'm but sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. You're right. We don't know that.
Yeah, I don't want to see the Cowboys again.
Whenever they play the home season opener, whether it's week one or week two, I like the idea of the. Yeah, I don't want the Cowboys anywhere near.
We've got enough of Giants-Cowboys week
go.
One.
No, please. Stay away. Out of all those teams, I think the Commanders make some sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Of looking at the list now. Yeah.
Clearly, we have not thought about this for a second. But
no, especially because I would have maybe said the Eagles, but again, the Eagles have already announced that they are in Brazil week one. So
I don't want
the Eagles. And I don't want the Giants to be going to Brazil in the season.
Though the NFL would love the Saquon storyline, wouldn't they?
That's true.
No, thanks. I'll pass on that. Then the Giants have gotten the Eagles twice pretty consistently in December and January over the last few years. So
yeah,
that's kind of been a staple.
I do expect
matchup.
At least one of those Giants-Eagles games to be in primetime. No. Whatever it is,
and it'll be the first one too.
Yeah,
because they want the first game back with Saquon to be a primetime game.
Also, real quick, I just saw Matt Parrott signed with the Denver Broncos.
Oh, good for Matt.
Officially signed, so
really good dude. Shame he couldn't stay healthy. Matt, good stuff. Matt Sitek, John Schmelk, Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com/tickets, guys. You want 2024 season tickets, go check it out. You get membership benefits, a lot of great stuff. Again, Giants.com/tickets. And while you're online, go download Giants TV, the Giants video content app. You get on-demand highlights, direct to Big Blue fans. It's free on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and the Giants mobile app. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tomorrow it is Dettino and Casillas. I got this one right for once, Pearson. How about that? And then I'm back on Friday. Hopefully you can spare some time with us as you skip work and watch the NCAA tournament. We'll see you then, everybody.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.